Once again,
this is rumor control. Here are the facts.
Welcome to A Scattered Few.
Brought to you by podcastmedia.net.
Podcast Media.
Greetings and thanks for joining me. The idea behind A Scattered Few, the podcast, is to have a lyrical study and a scriptural commentary on the lyrics that I wrote in Scattered Few, spanning Sin Disease and Jawbone of an Ass, Grandmother Spaceship, and Omega Number 5. It's been suggested that I write a book for many years, and I just still don't feel too comfortable doing that. And then I thought, well, if I did write a book, I would maybe do a book of the lyrics, using the lyrics for Scattered Few and explaining them, a commentary as well as the scriptural reference or the scriptural basis for a lot of the lyrics. And then the other day I thought, well, heck, why don't I just podcast it? And that's what this is. So the idea again is to just go through the lyrics of the songs, explain to you what I meant when I wrote them, what I was thinking about, the ideas or opinions or whatever I was trying to bring across through the lyrical content, any scriptural references that might be applicable, and a brief history on what was going on at the time to cause me to write that song. But to begin with, what I'd like to do is a little brief history on the band. After being abroad in Central and South America for about 3 years, I returned to the United States, Burbank, California to be exact, where I'm from, and I was en route to Colorado. I was going to go to a commune, and that's where I was going, and just went to L.A., to Burbank, to see my family and friends for a couple weeks and then head on out to Colorado. That 2 weeks ended up lasting about 2 months or so. I was actually waiting for my uncle to come up to the States and set it up for me to join this community, this commune in Colorado. And he tarried about 2 months. And in the meantime, I started going to a church with my brother Omar. And so we, started writing a couple tunes, nothing serious. And one of the elders of the church approached me one day and asked me what it would take to go into the studio and record these two tunes that my brother and I had worked on. And so I got on the horn with a couple studios and found a little place in North Hollywood and got the rates and went back to the elder and told him, hey, this is what it's going to cost. And he put up the money and proceeded to explain how this church wanted to start an outreach to the alternative youth culture in Southern California, though they had no idea where they were, what they were, or how to go about it. They asked if I would be interested in spearheading or leading this outreach. And so here was a church that was willing to not only fund an outreach, have me lead it, but also fund a band, because the idea was to lead the charge with a band, and I chose punk rock, a punk rock band, and that they would also support me while I was doing this, so not to get a job and take care of this, so I could do it full time. They actually didn't do too bad of a job as far as funding the band, equipment and recording and all that, but they did have a hard time fulfilling their part of the bargain when it came to supporting me financially. And so that made it a bit difficult. I was 19, no job, no job experience in the U.S., no driver's license, because I left when I was 15, the U.S. when I was 15. So we went to this recording studio in North Hollywood, my brother and I, Omar and I. We had two tracks we were going to record. One was called God Gave Us Life, that I would sing, and the other was called You, that Omar would sing. I would be playing guitars and drums, and we brought in a friend of ours, an old friend of ours named Lou Beccaria, to play the lead guitar on You, because there was a place for a solo on that song. And I think it was 8 tracks. So we went in there and laid them in two days, or one day possibly, I'm not quite sure. I think it was 2 days where we recorded them and mixed them. And so we had to borrow a drum set because I had no equipment. I'd given away about 3 guitars before I came back up to the States, and I only brought back my 12-string acoustic that by the time I got to the baggage claim in Los Angeles had been broken into, and there was no guitar. I think that probably happened at the airport in Ecuador. But either way, I had no equipment, so we had to borrow amplifiers, drum sets, guitars. It was one of those type of things. But we showed up and recorded these 2 tracks. God Gave Us Life with me on vocals, Lou Bucaria and I on rhythm guitar, and Omar on bass, and myself on drums, and you. And we're going to hear these 2 songs back to back. I don't think they really need any real lyrical explanation. They're pretty pretty forward with what we're talking about. And here they are.
Smite the shepherd and the sheep shall be scattered. We're the scattered few. He died for me, a lonely man. Showed me his love again and again. Can't hide the fact that he loves you. I'm here to tell you what to do. You think it's cool for me? Well, how about you? You died to set me free. Your love is true. Through the cross he shed his blood. Showed me a love that's from above. The pain he bore was for my sin. And I will be with him again. You think it's cool for me? Well, how about you? You gotta set me free. Your love is true. God give us life. God give us life. God give us life. God give us life.
to Christ.
Those two songs were recorded in March of 1983, 2 or 3 weeks after Omar's 17th birthday, and about a week or so after my 19th birthday. So, armed with a two-song demo, I proceeded to make some phone calls. I had always said that while in Central America, that Central and South America, that if I ever made it back to the U.S. and God allowed me to do music again, and that's really questionable whether I was being allowed to or not, because again, I was supposed to be going to Colorado, so it's Scatterfew could have been or was probably, in all honesty, birthed out of disobedience, because I stayed in L.A. I chose to stay and do this band as opposed to go to Colorado. Still don't know if that was a good idea or not, but So armed with a two-song demo, I had always said that if I ever made it back to the States to do music, I would love Terry Taylor of Daniel Amos to produce me. So now that I have a band, a punk rock band with a two-song demo, I decided to go find Terry Taylor. I spent about, I don't know, I'm going to say about 3 or 4 days calling around. I think I called street-level artists, phone number, for their booking agent off one of their albums, and just started connecting the dots until I left a voicemail and actually spoke to Ed McTaggart, the drummer for Daniel Amos, explained to him who I was, what I was, what I was trying to do, and that I'd love to hear back from Terry. He thought Terry would be interested, and it would be, like he said, right down his alley, and would give him my information. And I very clearly remember the evening we're at my parents' house, around the dinner table, when the phone rang and my mom answered it, and she goes, "Yes, who's calling? One moment, please." And she looked at me and she goes, "Terry Taylor?" And I hadn't explained to Omar what I was up to, so Omar had no idea what I was doing. So when Omar heard my mom say that a guy named Terry Taylor was on the phone, you should have seen the look on his face. It was priceless. He doo-dooed in his pants. This was rated G. And I just gave him this little sly look, and I got on the phone, and immediately had a rapport with Terry Taylor right at the very beginning. Yes, he was interested. He was excited. And, he would be in the Valley working on an album in North Hollywood. I think it was like a March 8th, if I remember. I don't know why, but I think it was March 8th, 1983, literally 2 weeks after getting off the plane, I would be with Terry Taylor with a two-song demo, trying to get him interested to produce something with us, for us, help us out. So, that's what happened. And we ended up going into the recording studio in July. June. Whitefield Studios, famous for a lot of the early Daniel Amos albums, among others, with Tom Roy, the legendary Tom Roy Engineering, and we recorded 11 tracks, songs from Out of the Attic. Five of the songs on Out of the Attic are from that recording session. We actually recorded 11, recorded and mixed in 2 days. By this time, we had acquired Alan Pellerin on vocals. I decided I had just wanted to play guitar, and Brian Anderson, an old friend of mine from school, on drums, and the four of us, Omar and I and Brian and Alan, went to the studio with Terry Taylor and recorded an 11 song album that Terry would try to shop that no one would be interested in. He actually had Star Song interested for a little bit until they decided to throw all their money at Petra in 1983, but realistically, what would Star Song do with us? We could barely find a label 7 years later to do anything with us. Scatterfew was always too much of a risk. So now we're in the studio. It's been March, April, May, June, 4 months of work. And now we're in the studio with Terry Taylor, 4 months later, recording 11 songs. And for the next year or so, Scatterfew would exist. For a total of maybe 18 months at that, the first initial idea of Scattered Few would last a year and 6 months max, with maybe 3 or 4 shows under our belt. And the crazy thing is that it became an international band. People were writing about us in international magazines. And I've always said that Scatterfew was always bigger than me, and it had a life of its own. And no band should get that popular or receive that level of cult status for four shows. It was just the idea, the concept, and the groundbreaking idea of a band called Scatterfew that made it so popular and so mysterious. Yeah, there's a lot of guerrilla marketing involved that I was doing. That, yes, I did do that. But it was also the legs that it grew its own legs and ran between 1985 and 1989. A cassette that ended up becoming part of Out of the Attic. That cassette I had put out in 85, and it was bootlegged and just spread like wildfire for 5 years all over the United States and the world, literally the world. And everywhere I turned, if anyone recognized me, they would always talk about Scatterfew. And I was not doing Scatterfew. I was doing a band called Signier that was more of a modern, which would basically be the blueprint for Spyglass Blue. And so when I did decide to pick up Scatterfew again in 1989, it would be an incredibly spoiled, way too easy transition from idea to real band to shows to record label to Cornerstone Festival. I mean, that literally took 8 months, I think. It was crazy, but that's for the next show. Kill the Sarks with Sin Disease. Thanks for listening. Hope you weren't too bored. Bye.
Podcast. Media.